of it is that that they went ahead and did it anyhow, with the thought that it would be tested for a year. And during that year, towards the end of the year, I said to George, "Now, George, look, if you want to, you know, if you want to be athletic director, you can be athletic director, but you can't be coach and athletic director both. At least I can't recommend that." He said, "Well, you know, what about my annuity?" I said, "Even though you haven't finished 5 years, I will assure the annuity. Well, what about my assistant coaches? We will keep them employed to the end of the year if the new coach doesn't want them. Protect their salaries to the end of the year." You know, assistant coaches come and go all the time, but I said, "We'll protect them because you're worried about them." I said, "I'll put all that in writing," and I did. He still said that's not the way he wanted it. So, you know, that really caused finally the whole flap, you know, and then we named another athletic director and all those things went on. Now, everybody wants to focus that discussion about the conflict between George Perlis and I. The conflict was really with the Board of Trustees and it superseding the authority of the president. It had happened, as I told you, two or three other times when they had their own candidates for other positions and other intrusions on other matters. And all I was trying to do was to make clear, you know, the difference between the role of the president and the role of trustees of a university. And, you know, as you know, every editorial page in the state supported my position. And the only people who were critical were, you know, sports junkies. And not even all of them.
There were, as I remember from that time period, there was a back page of the Sports Illustrated that had a full page on the discussion, and it was very supportive of your position.
Yep. But you know, again, it's too bad because it really, you know, they really didn't get at the heart of the issue. And you know, but the trouble is that it caused a schism between me and some members of that board, which could never be healed, you know, and which continued on. To the point where, you know, in the final analysis, the board proposed, they discussed giving me a contract. And I said, "I don't need a contract. I'm not interested in a contract." They put one person in charge of the discussion. And I said to that person, "Look at..." At the end, he said, "Well, you know, we'll give you a one-year contract." I said, "I got a one-year contract." I said, "You know, any court of law, if you were to dismiss me, you know, would force you, compel you to pay out a year, because, you know, that's fair practice." I said, "Why don't you simply do what we do in our review of all administrative officers? Simply publicly state that my performance has been, you know, acceptable, and that you want to reappoint me for a period of time. No contract, no nothing." He said, "No, we can't do that." And that's when I came home and said to my wife, "It's time for us to leave." And that's how we decided to leave. And that was the real reason for doing it. Because I couldn't even say that much. You know, couldn't say, well, you know, and I thought I had done a fairly good job for Michigan State at that point. So that's what it all boiled down to in the final analysis, and it was unfortunate. In fact, an interesting discussion occurred a couple of meetings before that about how someone would be made emeritus, and would every president be emeritus? And Bob, he is still on the board.
Weiss.
Yeah, said, "Well, not. We don't necessarily have to make everybody emeritus, you know." It's clear to what you're saying, you know, and they didn't in my case. It's amazing. Amazing how personal, how involved a few of those people were, how badly they behaved, you know.
How, would you talk a little bit about your involvement on the Knight Commission? How did you persecuted.
Well, Father Hesburgh called me and asked me if I'd be the Big Ten representative. Father Hesburgh, by the way, was very supportive of me during all this time. Wonderful man. And understanding, you know, the moral philosophic issues involved was supportive. But he asked me to be a part of it. And some board members felt that was inappropriate for me to be involved in that too, just like they were infuriated, a few of them, when we discussed bringing Penn State into the league. Were opposed to it, demanded that I vote against it. Amazing. But that's how I got involved with the Knight Commission, and I think I was, you know, a mover and shaker in it. I'll never forget, I was down in Florida talking to an alumni group, and they said, gee, though, if you do all these things, you know, is it going to destroy our competitiveness? I said, wait a second. If we were to do all these things and all the schools were to do it, we'd all be the same. I said, do you think there'd be any less people at the Michigan State-Michigan game or the Michigan State-Notre Dame game if all the students on the field have B averages than there are today? I said, it's going to be equal, you know, the tradition's going to hold. And they said, yeah, that makes sense, you know. But that's how I got involved, and I was asked to join them. And
have you had any continuing contacts since you left Michigan State? Any with people that were there?
Oh yeah, there's some people that I'll tell you what you miss the most are your friends. I mean, you leave an institution and it continues on and it's doing well. But you know, I had people like Stan Drobeck and. Brad Greenberg, who you may or may not know, was a very close friend, and remains a very close friend, has it all these years. And John Collins, John and Mary Collins, John is an attorney in town who we see all the time, you know, we're very close to. I mean, Charlie Blackman, who was in education for years, he and I are Packard buffs, you know, and we talk Packards all the time, and he's a wonderful man. There are several people like that who are my good friends. And I mean, I've got, you know, friends that I grew up with in the city, in Michigan too, not in the city any longer, but in Michigan. So there are a lot of connections I have and, you know, people that I still correspond with. And still a lot of Michigan State folks who are here and there, some still there, some other places, you know, call upon me for counsel, sometimes recommendations, and I'm always glad to provide them. Students, former students, I hear from former students quite a bit. I mean, I thought we had wonderful students at Michigan State. You know, I had a very good relationship with them, and I think there was a spirit of trust and confidence that they had in me, too. And, you know, and I was deeply moved at how supportive they were, you know, almost universally during my tenure there, and what we were doing. And the warmth with which I was always greeted at commencements and stuff, you know, it was really And I'll tell you, the most moving experience of all was we'd have a party for the graduating seniors at Cole's house, you know, and we'd break it into two evenings because there were so many students. But one night there were a whole bunch of kids in the house, and my wife said, "You got to come out on the deck." And I said, "You've got to come out on the deck." And I came out on the deck, and the marching band was out there, and they'd only done this with Walter Adams, the only other person they gave a band jacket too. They gave me a band jacket and they stood there and sang the alma mater. You want to talk about, you know, gut-wrenching. And you know, I love the place. I mean, I think it's beautiful. I think the people are one of the great faculty. I mean, staff that really cares a lot, works very hard, you know, with inadequate resources in my view, done a great job. Beautiful, beautiful campus. I mean, one of the prettiest in the country. My wife loved living in Lansing, in East Lansing, because, you know, it's very gettable. Everything is there. It's a pleasant community. You know, the Midwest people are just plain friendly. And, you know, she's not a Midwesterner, and she just loved it. And we would have stayed there. I mean, I would still be there today. You know, I would have, you know, be thinking about retiring now from Michigan State rather than from this place, had it not been for that set of circumstances.
If you look back on your legacy as president in the 7 years that you were there, what are some of the, maybe a couple of things that stand out most or that you're
thinking? Well, I mean, three or four, I think. certainly the capital campaign and the establishment of a structure for development. I think that was an important achievement and one that is going to serve the university very, very well. A second was mollifying a rift that had occurred between the university and the alumni. You might recall that.
Yes.
And I was able to, I think, breach that. In fact, the former alumni director came back, the former board, and were very thankful for all that I had done to ensure that the alumni were in the fold, you know. And I think, you know, that was a substantial achievement as far as I was concerned, and one that was going to be very important to the university in the long haul. I think we placed a lot more attention on the needs of handicapped students while I was there, and they gave me some awards when I was leaving for having done so, working hard to make the campus more accessible and making people more sensitive to their needs. I think we made some real advances in the area of diversity and you know, both in enrollment and in creating a positive environment for minority students and women as well, and it's something that that I pride myself in. We made some improvements in terms of capital projects, which were important. The university needed. We improved the relationships at that time with the legislature and with the government overall. I think they were healthy. Town and Gown was not great when I got there, but you know, when I was there, we had great relationships with the mayor in East Lansing and the council and with Lansing as well, because I played an active role, you know, with the chamber and a lot of other people. I worked on projects with them and brought the university in and brought them into the university. And I think that was significant. You know, some other things that we'd hoped would blossom didn't necessarily blossom the way we wish, like developing a research park out by the university club. You know, we did get the space set aside and the planning all done. I think it's beginning to evolve now. But
that's correct.
But I thought that would long term, that was to the advantage of the university and hopefully, and above all, I mean, I think the thing I'm proudest of is that, and John Hanna used to say this to me, you know, so he said some wonderful things to me, things that will stay with me for a lifetime. I don't care all the other stuff you could say, negative or whatever. The things that John said to me that meant so much to me were things like this. He said, you know, you're the first president since I left who really understands what this university is about, who really understands what a land-grant university should be. And one night at a foundation dinner, I was talking about, you know, needing gifts for the university. And John wasn't like this. This was not his nature. You think, you know, if you know the man, he's quiet. He got up and he walked over and put his hand on my shoulder and he said, "This is the greatest gift of Michigan State University." And I was just stunned, you know. But it was the highest praise that I could imagine. Because, you know, what I wanted to do was remind people what Michigan State was about. I wanted them to feel really, really proud. And I think maybe that's what I did when I was there. I think people felt good. With all the problems, people felt good about being associated with Michigan State. The students felt proud to be there, you know, proud to be associated with an institution that cared a lot, you know, that reached out to people. And I, you know, during my tenure there, during the 100th year of the National Association of State Universities Land Grants, I was the chairman that year. I mean, they did a big volume, and you know, we're right at the front of it, you know. They used to say that there was no stronger advocate for the land grant movement in the United States than me at that time. And that's maybe the thing I'm proudest of, because I really do believe that. And I, you know, Michigan State was the first land grant. It's the prototypical land grant. In my view, it is the best of the land grants because it does all the things that land grants. I mean, even the medical school is a land grant medical school, for God's sakes. You know, putting students out there in all those communities, and you know, I felt so good about that. And you know, and I felt good about the people on the campus because it didn't seem to matter where I went. There was always, you know, warm receptions wherever you were, place to place. it's just tragic that that things worked out finally the way they did.
One of the things that's recently happened at the school is the addition of a law school, which many people had long been involved with, but never happened. Was that part, when you were there at your tenure, did that come up during your...
Yeah, in fact, you know, we tried to negotiate with Cooley. We really made an effort to negotiate with Cooley, to bring Cooley, because Cooley was located right there, had buildings. You know, their library could have become the state legal library. And I thought, you know, we could take Cooley and create a really land-grant law school to make lawyers, to graduate lawyers, you know, who are going to serve people. We're going to be corporate types, right? And I've seen Brennan since at something else. And I really tried to negotiate a deal where, and in fact, I had the support of members of the legislature and of the attorney general. If he would have been willing to have done that, that would have happened like that. And we wouldn't have had to build buildings or anything. Now, we would have, what he didn't like was he wanted to stay in charge of everything and maintain their own board. And I said, that can't be. But if Judge Brennan would have agreed, then we would have, you know, probably downsized it and, you know, been more selective, because they select a lot of students and have a lot of high attrition, and had it right there in the state capitol, which would have been to our advantage. And it was the perfect thing, but it didn't work. So then we began to have these conversations with the Detroit College of Law, which is, you know, a reputable law school. But they were just being instituted at the time. And, you know, I said, gee, we got so many other needs right now. I mean, until we address those other needs, how can we assume another responsibility? I mean, it's, you know, why should we be in the business of bailing out a law school that's in fiscal difficulty when there are lots of law schools in this state? You know, sometimes I'm approached here about, well, why don't we try to incorporate one of the, you know, minor law schools in this community? And I say, because what will it take to make it of the same quality as Harvard's law school or Boston College's law school or Boston University's law school? I mean, we'd have to invest so much to do it right. And, you know, do we need it? I mean, do we need another law school? Or do we need one here? So, you know, it was the same kind of thinking I was going through. And maybe I'm overly cautious. I don't know. Maybe that's a fault of mine. But it seemed to me, at least at the time, that we had so many other needs. And that, you know, as long as our faculty were being overtaxed and underpaid, and as staff as well, I mean, that ought to have been our highest priority, to build what we had, the land grant things that we had, you know, to their fullest before we started thinking about additions.
Well, I want to thank you very much on behalf of the project for your contributions. I appreciate the time you spent.
Well, I hope you can filter through all that something that makes sense, because every time I read a transcript, I say, gee, did I really talk that way? You know?
But that's an oral history transcript as opposed to a written document.
Yeah.
And that's one of the nice things about an oral history.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you both for coming. I mean, it's kind of you to come all the way here.